Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Really appreciate your support, whether you're watching on YouTube or nightly at 11 p.m. Pacific or 2 a.m. Eastern on DBNA TV at dbnatelevision.tv or streaming with the DBNA TV app on Amazon Fire, Roku, and Apple TV, or listening on your favorite platform. Before we get to my conversation with Tessa Barrera, a little about my story. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job and then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I can learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. Tessa Barrera is one of my favorite people ever. Texas, born and raised. We work together at KFI. Now she is on 94.5 The Buzz, part of the Rod Ryan Show, the number one morning show in Houston. When you left LA back for Houston, did you think, oh, I grew up in Texas. I can totally handle the heat. It's no big deal. I've got this. Here we are talking in the middle of June. What say you, young lady?
Well, it was all fun and games until our power grid started saying that, oh, wait, maybe we're going to have, like, you guys are going to have to maybe put your thermostat on 78. When I lived in LA, I never had central heat and air. I always thought that was the weirdest thing. I'm like, where is the central heat and air?
You know, right.
But I was dumbfounded. The memes that have come out of this situation that we're in right now are completely undefeated. No one gets more pissed off in Texas than Texans. Like, it is just a whole thing. So I honestly still think I'm good. Now, I'm like, oh, I miss summer so much. You know, we had that winter storm. Like, I've been dying to get
right.
or water. So right now, I'm good. I'm Gucci. I'm great. If they roll back our usage, I'm not okay. Send help and ask me again in August, because I will be 50 shades of brown and I will be so fed up. I already know this.
You ready for hot girl summer?
Yes, I live for it. It's what I was born to do. I was born to have a hot girl summer. And the first one here was taken from me. I got COVID. I got COVID last July and I had a
camping trip. You did? Oh my gosh.
I had a camping trip planned with my brother and sister. It was, and my mom, and it was for a week, and I was feeling sick, and they go, don't get a test, just come. And I said, are you kidding?
What?
Because we were going to be, like, secluded.
Well, plus they're also Texans.
So. Right, and my mom's not one of these, like, afraid to get it. She's like, I will take care of you. And I'm like, no. Are you, like, no. I'm not going to go. Like, I can't go. And they were like, we really thought you were going to come. I was like, no. No. So I just, you know, I never, yes to the hot girl summer. I have been wanting to have one and I think the world's finally opening up. So it's going to be a green light. Hot girl summer just got green lit by me, the producer.
What was COVID like?
Really a huge headache, like the worst hangover you've ever had, except bigger, and you didn't have any fun.
Without the fun attached to it, right?
Yeah. So yeah. It really sucked. For me, a ton of body aches, a little bit of nausea. And just overall, like, just being a baby, a little bitch baby, like, that's what...
Like, a really bad flu plus.
Yeah.
But not, like, ICU ventilator shit.
No, I did struggle. You know, I give the news reports on Rod Ryan, and we were doing remote, and I would... My breathing was different, and I was running before I got it, so I was up to, like... 7 miles. And then after that, I ran a mile and I was exhausted. And then in between news reports, you know how you press the mic on, I would turn it off and go, and like,
just to try to get for the next one. Yeah.
Yeah. So it did mess with my breathing a little bit and I was getting really frustrated with myself, but I think it took a couple months. I was negative, you know, I tested negative right away, you know, after I got better, but then I didn't completely get better until like a couple months down the road. So just tell people, be patient with yourself, because you're going to be really frustrated, but your body just went through something that it never really knew.
Let's dive deep real quick here, right? We're not even 5 minutes in. Are you somebody who shows yourself grace? Are you somebody who forgives yourself? Or is that a learned skill over time?
I'm getting better.
Or are you still not there yet? It's just this one time.
I feel like I'm getting better. I've worked with some people. I blame some of the greatest coaches I ever had when I was younger, because they were always tough on me and I always came out better on the other side. But you can't always treat yourself like an old football Texas coach, which was what like my, you know, the people that I was dealing with.
Right.
I think as I've gotten older, I am allowing for a little more grace in my life. We could all use a little more, but when I moved here, I wanted so badly to impress my new coworkers and my bosses. And sometimes if I had a bad show, or what I thought was a bad show, or I missed an opportunity or didn't say something, I'd be really tough on myself. And I'm getting better at that too. So.
And where did that come from? I mean, it can't just be your coaches, right? I mean, was it just something that you just naturally responded to, that kind of tough love?
Yeah, I think wanting to be a people pleaser. I think growing, I'm the oldest of four kids, so I've always tried to be a good example. I've always tried to please my mom, you know, the most, the family and stuff. And I had to really dial back on that to do some self-care. But I guess just wanting to execute something, like, that's always been, I guess with sports, that I've always been a team player. I love team sports, and I love what people can achieve if they all work together. I think that's great. But man, I've just, that rage and that anger that I would kind of, you know, manipulate to this team sport, it doesn't serve you well in your adult years. It's like, you have to put a lid on that.
I can't remember who it was. I think, it was Neil Brennan, I think, on the Dan Le Batard show, who said that when talking about football players specifically, it's like, I'm always surprised that society is surprised that football players sometimes do football at the wrong time. Right. And with that kind of mentality, like, if you take that go get them at all costs mentality of sports into your real life, everyday life, yeah, dangerous is exactly, that's the best word for it.
Yeah. Yeah. That fearless attitude is great on a football field or a basketball court, but you could really hurt yourself, hurt someone else, you know, put yourself in a weird situation if you carry it over. So I think learning to separate the two, I took myself entirely too seriously when I was really young, and I'm just learning to, you know, laugh at my mistakes, and honestly showing other people that side too. People identify way more than that than they ever will with the other stuff.
Totally. It's fascinating. I was doing the podcast a couple of years ago, and I was mainly just like, hey, tell me about your career and blah blah blah, right, whatever. And in doing this new podcast and telling a lot more of my story, it's fascinating just telling people a little bit of my story, whatever that is, personal, professional, or otherwise. It's amazing the depths that other people will now open up to you just because they feel like, oh, this person's sharing, I can share too.
This is a safe space that resonates with me. I too have been, I have hurt, or I have messed up, or I have, you know, done this. I would always interview athletes. You know, I was a sports reporter for 5 years. And I would always, you know, they want to tell you the good stuff. You know, I did this and I accomplished this and this. And I would always say, okay, but what like is the thing that you had to overcome to do all that? And that would always be the soundbite, you know, that would always be the part that was like, okay, now this is a good story. All that other stuff is great, but what mess did you kind of have to pull together or fix or, you know, overcome in order to achieve all these things? And that was always my favorite part.
Well, the idea also, and I promise you, I'm not name dropping. I don't know Neil Brennan. I don't know Dan Le Batard, but I do know Ben Maller of Fox Sports Radio. And he says the story is in the losing locker room.
Yes.
It is in the losing locker room.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Who doesn't love an underdog story? I mean, those are the best. Those are the ones you put on your reel.
Yes, exactly. Now, did you we'll talk sports first and then we'll talk media. Did you always have an affinity for sports, playing it, covering it?
Yeah, just being competitive all my life.
Now, is that your family? Is that you, or is that Texas?
I think it's the mishmash.
It's just all of the above. You have no choice.
And people always say, well, I have a lot of brothers. Well, I was the oldest. So I had cousins who I would always play around and, you know, real rough and stuff. But I've always loved the physicality of just being outside and, you know, playing tag and like knocking people and pillow fights and just, you know, just contact, even from a very, very young age. And then I grew up, and I think the love of actually other teams, that comes from my brother and my dad, because there was always a cowboy game on in the background.
Yeah. I have no real allegiances anymore, so I can't go after the star. So we'll leave that in the comment section.
Leave it for everyone else in America. It's fine. And I used to fight it because I didn't want people to be like, oh my God, she's a Cowboys fan. Oh my God. I'm like, you know what? I don't have to be a fan. Like, I can just watch it. I can just watch a game. And then I would do it. I'm like, you are kidding yourself if you think you're not obsessed with that football team. Like, you're so obsessed. It's annoying, right? Like, you're pretending not to cheer for them, and you are, you're in love. You're obsessed. But I think, I don't know, wanting to succeed and achieve. And I loved, when I was little, I loved trophies. I would, you know, medals and tournaments. I wanted the hardware. I thought that was like, I was doing something.
Yeah,
and maybe I was, but I think you learned, like we mentioned, you learn a lot more from losing than you do from winning. So it wasn't until I started taking some L's in life.
And at the time that we were playing, there were no participation trophies.
No. You know,
there was a certificate, hey, thanks for coming, but there, if you got a trophy, that means you placed.
Right, right. It meant something. It was important.
Yeah. There's some significance there. Absolutely. But was it always football that you would either play or try to play? I know you mentioned basketball.
I love basketball, but I'm 5'5". I love volleyball, but I'm 5'5". I was kind of meandering around when I saw this lingerie football league tryout in LA when I was 24, and I looked at it and they had edited it so nice, and they had shown me, you know, all this girls being like competing,
right.
and they were like me, they were aggressive, they were, you know, one of them even looked like me, one of them in the promo was like, that girl looks like me,
that this could be me, right?
And now I'm a close friend with her, Monique Gaxiola. She's now a firefighter in LA County. And she is like my sister now, which is funny because I was like, we could be sisters. And now we actually are.
That's cool.
So that was new. Football was completely new, but it was something competitive to do. And when you're a woman, there aren't a ton of opportunities like that. And it was in LA and they had won the championship. And I was like, I think I want to do this. And my mom was like, don't you dare. Like, literally.
Really? I will support you in everything you do, but please don't do this. Wow.
So in true, you know, rebel fashion, I went over there. But before I went, my brother, I told him what I was doing. And my brother was a captain of his football team in high school. And he said, Tess, before you go over there and make an ass out of yourself, would you come with me to the field and like do some drills? He goes, I think they'll have you do like a shuttle drill.
Yeah.
They'll probably have you do like a 40, and they
can
might
you catch,
you,
can you throw?
Right. And the hand-eye coordination, that was fine, but just kind of fine tuning. And I remember going to the tryout, and everything me and my brother had worked on, it was the tryout. So I always tell him, I'm like, I don't think I would have like nailed it the way I did had we not gone out to the local football field and just, you know, he got me to the basics. So there's not girls that are going to show up and be well-versed in football. We didn't play Pop Warner. We didn't play, you know, when we were little, we just have watched it.
You weren't allowed. You weren't allowed. That's the boys' sport. If you want to participate in any way, shape, or form, you're cheerleading or in the stands.
Correct. Which I also did. I was an arena football cheerleader. before that, you know, because that was as close as I could get to the game.
That was the opportunity, right?
And it was so funny because all the girls were like trained dancers and I was just athletic enough to kind of get by. I could jump really high. I could do all these things, but they would make fun of me. They're like, you're just so stiff, you know? And I'm like, well, you don't know when there's an interception and I'm telling you to save your life that the ball's coming back this way. Like, we all have our strengths here,
right.
You know? So, yeah, just always wanted to be by the action. Sports are they're the worldwide language of love.
Any of those arena cheerleading moves making their way to TikTok?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I keep like five in my pocket from these like little sideline routines we would do. Every now and then I'll just bust one out at a bar, you know, be like, oh, that girl, she's got some moves.
Oh, okay.
On these for years.
Yeah, but just don't dig any deeper than that because I've got nothing. What you saw now
let's get
is
out of here. I've done all five. Like, let's get out of here.
Hot girl summer, just one move a week. That's all you need to reveal. And then by the time you circle back, the people 5 weeks ago have forgotten what you did.
Or just a combination of the steps.
Oh God, please. Right. No, please, please. No, no. Since we're talking about TikTok, I think it's easier for our generation to adapt to the new platforms, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, and to kind of explain to the people around us, like, hey, no, this it may not be the new thing. It may not be the thing 5 years from now, but it's the new. We've mm-hmm got to get on it. How have you embraced new platform after new platform, whether it's Snap or TikTok or IG Reels or whatever? How have you adapted to that? And then we'll circle back to that, the early tests.
Okay, so my whole crew on the Rod Ryan show, it's three dudes and myself, they swear that TikTok is paying me. Like, they swear that TikTok, and they're like, what are they giving you that you are so for this new platform? I said, guys, you don't understand. Like, this is where everyone is. This is where people are bearing their souls. They are sharing. It's a community. Like, we're really missing an opportunity if we don't have a TikTok. So the show didn't even have a TikTok. And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to make one. I'm going to make one and I'm going to have fun. And yeah, I did a couple of dance routines and, you know, being silly and just, you know, a couple of voiceover things, which is so easy. The app makes it so easy and workable to edit and different effects and stuff. And then I also, on the Rod Ryan show, one of my job, one of my tasks.
Please don't do that while I'm drinking.
What is it, like a responsibility?
There you go. Yeah. Boom.
There it is.
Yeah. I like how you and I are stumbling on the word responsibility. That's great. That's good. I have no idea what you're talking about.
That is so on brand for me. Okay. So I'm doing TikToks. I mean, I have to schedule the Twitter and I'm doing Twitter and we have a meeting every Wednesday, they're like, today we gained, you know, 100 Instagram followers. We are up 20 on Facebook.
Yeah.
And we have lost 25 on Twitter. And I'm like, oh, okay. Why? And granted, this was all during the election. So people were leaving Twitter. You know, feeling a certain way about social media in general.
Or Twitter does a cleanup and, oh, sorry, the 3,000 bots that were following you aren't following you anymore.
Correct. So I just felt like I was taking L after L after L, which is another way my competitiveness comes in. I'm like, I hate losing. I hate it so much. So I just one day quickly got on TikTok. I said, I've seen what this community can do. I told them, I said, every Wednesday we have a meeting. Just like I told you, I said, every Wednesday we have a meeting. I'm losing followers. I said, I've been trying to convince my boss to get us on TikTok. We are the number one morning show in Houston. You know, but we are dying on Twitter, basically. When I tell you that I got 3,000 followers overnight, like, boom, that's all it took. And I told my boss, I was like, I would like to focus some of our attention to TikTok. Like, I will still do the schedulings on Twitter, but I really think we're missing the boat on this, you know, new application. And it's fun. And they in the beginning, we're really resistant, especially the other two guys, because they're like, this app is so dumb. Like, we're so dumb. What are we doing it? Why? And I think a lot of the question that people have is like, why are they doing that? Well, why are they doing it? It's like, don't ask why.
Yeah.
just be, just whatever you're feeling, just do it, you know? And we made one. It's been a really nice bonding experience for us. Some of the ones we've done, they're so silly. We always get a laugh out of them. Not all of them are going to go viral. Not everything's a home run, but it is something we do at least 1 to 3 times a week. And, you know, it's new eyes on our radio show for people that maybe don't even listen to the radio.
And you never, so, you never know when that algorithm is going to pick you up. So you just got to keep feeding. You just got to keep feeding.
Yeah. And we have some fun making the videos, and you know, what is the harm in that? You know, it's a win-win situation.
And what's nice is IG Reels is set up in such a way that it can take TikToks no problem, you know? And so you're feeding more than one platform at a time. It's not as if, oh, okay, I go to TikTok and it's just got to live on TikTok. No, you take that, you save it, you put it out on all the platforms. Hey, that's a win.
Yep. And I'm noticing more we do like a couple of lighter, fluffier pieces during the newscast. And I'm finding that a lot of the sources for all these, you know, one woman did this, this, and this, or one person in Alabama did this. They're all TikTok stories. Yeah. They're things that have been viewed a million times, 2 million times. And we're hearing about them in the media mainstream because of TikTok, which is incredible.
So take me back. Growing up, I would imagine you were called a tomboy at some point. I don't even think that term really exists anymore, except for the older generation looking at like, oh, that girl's playing sports. She's a tomboy. Blah, blah, blah. But how did you deal with that?
I never really. So I got asked this question on International Women's Day, and one of the girls in our group was like, were we all tomboys? Were we all, you know, we all just like guys, girls? And I'm like, I'm a everybody girl. Like, I'm just living my life. And the way I've lived it, yes, I have leaned towards these things, but I feel like I've always had both masculine and feminine energy. I think everyone has a little bit of both anyway. Yeah. But yeah, growing up, I was really, really like my poor mother. Like I wanted to, like the guys would play shirts and skins on the basketball court, and I would like try to take off my shirt, and she'd be like, what are you doing? I'd be like, we're playing skins. Like I have to take off my shirt. You know, she'd be like, if you don't put your damn shirt on, like, you know, and I'm like thinking like, why do they get to do it? You know? So it was always like little things like that. And, getting in fights, you know, with some of the boys who maybe didn't like that I was competitive, or I remember in Catholic school, it was me and this other girl, and we were really good at basketball. We played on like a select team outside of school. So we would play boys versus girls. And when we would beat them, I mean, the boys would be mean to us. I mean, they were like mean with us. And my mom's like, you know, you don't have to always get in fights. I'm like, they just don't like that we beat them. And imagine like that being the explanation, you know, and what is my mom supposed to say? What is she supposed to do?
You know? Well, it's interesting because, you know, as the father of daughters, I'm trying to pick up these little notes from women I talk with on the podcast and just encounter in life. Like how do I raise two daughters to not be ashamed of who they are? I mean, you know, your mom is telling you, hey, could you not get into so many fights? And that immediately puts
you on them? Yeah.
Right. It's like, well, wait a minute. It's not me.
Right.
It's not me doing this. It's just fascinating how just what 30 years later now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, now we understand and probably understood then and just didn't want to pay attention to it. But the boys admired you and just didn't know how to handle that. Didn't know because they weren't taught how to handle their emotions and their feelings.
I always say men are going to be ready for like women, like maybe in like 100 years.
By the way,
I hope it's less, but I really, really hope it's less. And I love the energy that this new generation coming up. I mean, they're call outs. I'm going to tell you. The new generation, they're calling everyone out. You know, cancel culture is a thing, of course. But I think these new guys are really getting what it is not to have this sort of, you know, like, don't be against us, like, be for us, you know, that's right. A true, you know, way to be in society. Like, we're all humans, like, let's do this together. We're so much more powerful that way.
I should mention right now that, because every now and then I'll get my hands going, you know, because you and I, we talk with our hands especially, but every now and then I'll get it up to this, watch my face.
Ooh, so
this is my natural tone, and I don't know why my camera, I cannot figure out my camera settings, because now I'm this.
Oh, that's, you yeah. are glowing.
Now this is better, so I just need to keep my hands. Just
tie them.
Ah! Ah!
Just handcuff yourself. And then right.
Oh, I've done that already. I've done that already. So at what point, because you've got this gregarious personality, you've got this, you know, it's not just the competition. It's not, it's like you live life out loud, right?
Yeah.
And at what point did you either decide or get steered into or end up in the media arena?
Well, I posted a meme not too long ago that said, you know, what I do every day is for like the girls who got talks too much on their report card, right? Because that has been a theme for my whole life. I blame my aunts or my tias, you know, if you're Mexican, you know, they were, I grew up around, we're mostly Mexican. There's a little Italian in there. We're mostly 100% just loud, right? So if you wanted to be heard, you had to scream. You know, I didn't realize how quiet other families were. I didn't realize how scary my family was until, like, you know, you do this like integration thing with your friends and you're like, oh my gosh, like, you're awful people. Like, mom, you were terrified of us, you know? But I think I always wanted to be called on for reading. I remember that very young. I remember I didn't get a part in the school play that I wanted. It was like the main narrator part. And I was so upset. I just always remember wanting to be the one to freaking talk. Like, I want to be in charge of it. And then, you know, microphones, when you test them, test one, test two, that's my screen name on everything.
Right.
I legit thought the microphone people were calling me. I'm like, they want me to speak. I have to, yeah, like this is my time, right? And my mom's like, that's how they test a microphone. Like, so I just always wanted to, and then I was a twirler. Like, in addition to like the basketball and the you know, team sports, my mom put me in twirling. So I was very much a show woman of sorts, you know, and I loved it. I loved being dramatic. I loved doing all the things. Yeah.
No.
Yes. And, you know, it was always just about a good time. And like, I really appreciate all my aunts because my mom had me so young. They were all like my mom. So I would kind of get, like, in summers, I would just get rotated between them. And they were all so funny. And they were all so silly and loud and great in their own way. And I always tell them, you know, I try to take the best pieces of them. And I feel like that's me, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, your worst pieces, like, I don't know where those are. Like, that's
but now we know why mama rotated you every summer. It's like, oh, I need a break.
I sent her something today that was like, I have $10. What should I do with my kid this summer? that was like our situation. Like, we have $5 for the whole summer. What are we doing?
Now, did you grow up in Corpus Christi or did you kind of end up in?
No. I grew up, I was born and raised there. And my dad still has a home in the neighborhood where I grew up, my brother and I, and it's a really, like, it's a poor side of town, but it's home to me. So Corpus, it's the sparkling city by the sea. So there's this beautiful bayfront and all this stuff, but right on the edge of town, kind of before you get to the more developed stuff, is where my family is. And I rarely, when I go down to Corpus, I rarely even make it into town. You know, I stop there. That's my home. Yep. That's where we hang out. That's where we chill. That's like, that is literally where my heart is. And my mom actually has a house on the south side. She's like, you never come over here. I'm like, I don't go to that bougie part of town.
I don't need, I don't need the sparkling.
Yeah,
I've got this.
So it's also, I think, I don't think enough is said about that neighborhood because it was very much a scene of, okay, we're all going to the park. Okay. We're all going to go, you know, play this or do that. And it was, you know, it was a competitive, rough and tough. And We would have rock wars. I'm like, who has rock wars? Like, what's a rock war? Well, you just throw rocks at each other. Like, what the hell is that? Isn't that awful? Like, doesn't that sound awful?
It's brutal.
Like, we'd be like, rock war. Like, rock wars. Those other kids are going to get it. You know, it's like, we're going to die. One of us will. So
you survived Corpus Christi.
I Corpus Christi. We lived right around the corner from Selena's, who is like an icon, right? And I remember another story just from that neighborhood. It just came to my mind now. My little brother, who's 5 years younger than me, he got lost one time. And like, I think gang members like helped us find him. Like my mom was like rallied, like there were just gang members at the park. She was like, you guys need to help us. And like, they helped us find him. I was like, those are really sweet guys. You know, they get a bad rap. Those are really good guys.
They're helping mama.
Right. Because,
And we already decided your family's scary. So,
right.
You know,
this woman out of my face, like anything to make her stop yelling at us.
They weren't helping you. They were helping themselves survive mama is what it was.
She's great.
I want you to say your first and last name, and then the question will follow.
Okay. I want to do it like, yeah.
You could lock out. You could do whatever you want. You could do like some kind of mock report right now and lock out. It's up to you.
Tessa Barrera, Action 10 News.
How much shit have you gotten over the years from either people in the newsroom, management? I know just from working with you at KFI, we'd get so many comments when you would anchor or whatever. Like, why does she have to say her name like that? Why? Well, because that's her name, asshole.
Heavy on the R. I actually wrote Bill Handel today just to tell him hi, because I know he had surgery and stuff. And I signed my name, Tessa Barrera, and I put in parentheses. I said, heavy on the R rolls. Like, don't you forget to roll those damn R's. It's so funny that it was a thing for people, because it was just, that's how I said my name. And my dad was the one who told me, you know, this is how you pronounce it, you know? And if you try to say it the other way, the only time I will say it the other way, if it's like, I'm not going to make like a customer service or someone, I'm like, Barrera, like, I will break it down for you. But otherwise, my name is Barrera, you know? And it's a very Latina sounding name. And I don't know, Barrera almost sounds like, that sounds so foreign to me. And English is my first language. I just know, the one thing I know is like, you know, that's been our family name. And
I'm always fascinated. And again, this is coming from me, who earlier in the podcast, two dozen episodes ago, apologized to a girl I went to high school or a college with, because she wanted to say her name the way she says her name. Uh-huh. And I, back in college 20 years ago, I'm like, you know what? I don't think that's going to fly.
But you were probably well-meaning, you know, you knew.
I felt like I was, but looking back, it's like, no, I was just part of the machine trying to hold the woman down.
Yeah, but I also think that now, you know, people want to be accepting, but it doesn't happen with a flip of a switch. So the fact that you went back and self-corrected and said, hey, you know what, maybe that wasn't like that cool. I think people had the well-meaning behind it. Like, I'll take my grandma, for example. My grandma got in a ton of trouble for speaking Spanish in her classroom, so much so that she made sure all of us spoke great English. Now, I have one of my aunts is a dean of an English college. We have English majors in our household. The spoken word, we are all avid readers, but the language, our mother tongue, if you will, that got lost because my grandma said, I don't want you guys to go through what I went through. And granted, we picked it up, and some of us, you know, we get by, and I've actually taken, you know, Spanish 1, 2, 3 and, you know, done all of that stuff, and I can get by. But it was my grandma trying to assimilate us so we could go as far as we could, because that was just the way it was. And you didn't ask why. You just counted you just put your head down, did the work, and you know, and you would just hope that you didn't get called out. It was weird, you know? But it was frustrating too. It was frustrating too, because it's like, come on, like, you couldn't have taught us a little bit of, like, more. You couldn't have, you know, and it was just, That's what she wanted. That was the rule of her home. My other grandma's home on my dad's side was very different. She spoke Spanish all the time, which is where I picked up most of what I know. So I'm thankful for that. But that was my situation. I used to get frustrated. Like, why can't I just know it? Why didn't they just, you know, teach me? And it's like, you have to realize everyone did the best they could. So that was it, you know?
So you're in radio now and have been for several years. But you spent a lot of years also in TV. Which markets, and I guess just take me through that path of, okay, I'm doing TV, I'm covering sports and everything, and now, you know what? Let's give this radio thing a try.
So a fun fact, I actually started in radio. That was my first job. It was on there was a little bitty ESPN affiliate in Corpus. And it was three guys on a show. They were called the Benchwarmers. And the program director there knew about my career in the LFL. He had covered local sports for the paper. So he had done a couple of interviews with me from my high school teams. We would, you know, advance and stuff. So he knew me. And when I was back in Corpus for a little bit, he said, hey, he goes, why don't you stick around? He goes, we have a radio show here. He goes, we'd love to have a female voice on it. Yeah. We know you kind of know sports. If you want to come do like a test and we'll just see how it goes. I said, okay, let's do it. And I'm thinking I'm going to make like so much money and I'm like going to be balling. And I go and I loved it and I had a great time. And I was like, yes, you know, it was a 3-hour show.
Yeah.
I was like, so what? He was like, well, we'll give you $8 an hour.
I was going to say $6.25. So eight, you're rolling in it.
They were being nice, you know, and he goes, and you know, sometimes when you do a remote, we'll give you like a fee if you go here and there and they break it down for you and stuff. And I said, I just knew I wanted to be on the mic. So I was like, okay, I'll make my money elsewhere. It obviously is not going to be here.
Yeah.
So I did the show and I was doing the show. And at the same time, my girlfriend Celeste was in the WWE. Her wrestling name was Caitlin. And she was the women's champ at the time. She's from here in Houston. We grew up together. We knew each other. We worked out. She taught me how to work out basically the correct way, how to lift, how to be a bodybuilder, really. Yeah. And she said, hey, what are you doing down there? She said, I think you would be great for the WWE. Let me get you a tryout. And I said,
what?
I could be a diva. I could be a diva. No problem. I'm that right now, you know?
I don't even need to be a diva. I'll be the one the divas beat up. That's cool.
So she got me a tryout at the Performance Center, the WWE Performance Center in Orlando. And I went over there and they put you up for a week, and all week long, you're doing like challenges, you're doing like promo shoots, and they're seeing how you talk and how you, and I am my little cocky head. I'm like, nailed it. I'm going to be a diva. Like I just, you know, I knew. And so I'm just waiting on the call. Like I go try that out. And also the wrestling is really big on like knowing your history. So they were like, when you go over there, kind of like brush up on who, you know, the Hearts are, obviously Stone Cold, blah, blah, blah. So I'm looking up stuff, and I watched wrestling growing up. We had wrestling posters. We had like a Goldberg and a Sting poster in our bedroom that me and my brother shared. And I think mine
was Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, and Macho Man, Randy Savage.
That's a holy trinity right there, my friend.
Yeah. That's all I've got.
That's not all you have, but
all right, I got more. Cup of coffee in the big time. Yeah. And see, now I can't do the hands again with the hands and the skin tone. No. Okay. All right. So you're in the, no, yours doesn't do it. I don't know why.
So I go and I really think, you know, I nailed it, but as I'm researching, so I can just have awareness of the history and stuff, I'm Googling like Stone Cold, I'm looking up things, and I come across this thing that says, are you tough enough to take on the Broken Skull Challenge? Stone Cold is creating a reality show and he wants you. And I'm like, okay. And all you had to do was like send off a picture, write a paragraph why you would be great at it, and like fill it out. And I literally filled it out so quick, and like I had my headshots and my pictures because I was going to the WWE thing.
Right.
So
yeah.
I like it. So I'm like, yeah, done. Boom, boom, boom. Send it off. And didn't think about it again because I'm, you know, in this world and doing all these things. I come back and it's me and my friend Danny. We swear we're the best ones there. And even the guys there that were telling us, because it was guys and girls there competing, and we all kind of went out afterwards. And everyone was like, you guys are a shoo-in, you know, it's you two. So we were in contact, her and I, and she messaged, she goes, hey, did you get your acceptance letter? I just got mine. And I said, let me check my inbox. And I had just finished working at the radio station because I was still doing that. They gave me the time off to go try out. And I pulled over and it's like, we regret to inform you that we, you know, we currently, like, the female division is really glutted and we'll keep your number. Basically, don't call us. We'll call you.
Yeah.
And I pulled over and cried like the little, like the littlest baby, like, what am I going to do now?
That was my future. I was a diva.
How dare they? Right? Right? Like, how dare they? But I still had to go to work. So I had to pull over, cry, get my stuff and proceed to go to work. And I was in such a foul. Well, we do the show. I'm taking a break during the show and I look at my phone and I have a missed call from California. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I know that area code because I, you know, was there. And I called and I said, I had a missed number. You know, I had a missed call and remember, very depressed,
balling.
Very upset, very sad. Did someone call me, you know? And they're like, yes, is this Tessa? Hey, we've chosen you for the first season of Stone Cold's Broken Skull Ranch. And I go, that's awesome. I go, that's great. And they go, did you hear? Like, you're going to be like, we're going to fly you out to LA. You're going to get to meet Stone Cold. And I go, yeah, just send me my flight information. Like, thank you.
Well, you are a diva. Now you are a diva.
With this attitude, thank you.
You didn't get into WWE, but you made sure you were still a diva.
Right.
That's great.
Right.
That's great.
So they were probably like, this bitch, right? And rightfully so. Well, anyway, so I'm like, oh, this is my thing. So the winner of the Stone Cold thing gets like, I think it was like 50 grand or could have been even like 100 grand. I forgot what the pocket was. And I was like, oh, this is what I'm meant to do. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to win that. And then I can kind of figure out what my life is going to be. Because the football stuff was already, we had won two seasons with LA. They had stopped paying us. It got weird. So they had taken away our health insurance.
That's an issue.
It was weird. So yeah. I wasn't going to stay for that, you know? So I go do this show. And of course, my radio show is really excited about it because they're asking me about it. And we're talking about it a little bit on air. And I go and I compete and I can't tell anyone. Well, I freaking lost. Okay. And I beat myself. Like, I beat myself. I, in my head to this day, I should have won. I know what mistake I made and I could have beaten every girl there. Everyone there knew, like, I'm like, I'm the most athletic chick here. No one's going to beat me here. Right. No one. Well, I lost, you know, I lost by this much. Cause it was like a pull thing where you had to pull it to a certain point, beat myself. I lost. And it was so bad. The other girl needed like oxygen because she was like dying, but like I had missed a little mark and it was just this whole debacle. And I went home and I had to hold it in that I had lost. And my family was like, we know you won. You can just tell us, you know? And I said, no, I can't, you know? So we have this viewing party. I'm like, oh God, I don't even want to watch this again. But I actually came, I looked like really good. I looked athletic. I lost, but it was very close. It was very exciting. And that was it. And so my family was like, oh, you lost. Well, my mom being, you know, my momager that she is, she calls the local news and she's like, hey, did you know there's a local girl that was on like a national TV show here? And they were like, no, we didn't. And here's her number. So my mom says, hey, the news is going to go interview you. I go, mom, I'm not talking to them. I go, I'm not speaking about me losing on national TV. I'm not going to do that. You can tell them to kiss my ass. I'm not going to do that. I go, I have to work. I have a remote. I have to go to work. I have a real job on the radio. And so she was like, and she's like, she was like, well, where's your remote? And it was at some bar. She's like, well, they're going to be there. I told them already. Sorry. And she hangs up on me.
What?
Hangs up on me. So I'm at the remote. The news comes in. They interview me again. I'm a bitch because I'm salty and I lost and they're interviewing me. He was like, so what's next for you? And I was like, you know, I said, I don't really know. I said, I could do your job. And and apparently the guy really liked that fire. He goes, I'm gonna use that soundbite. And, you know, of course he had to get my contact information for just like different things. And after the story aired, all the following that I had gotten from like the LFL and the football and the radio show, it was like their most viewed story ever. me being on that Stone Cold show. So he texted me, he goes, you should intern here. He goes, you should call the station. He goes, you would be great here. He goes, you obviously can talk, you're on the radio. And he goes, just come by maybe at the end of the week. I said, okay, I'll go by at the end of the week. Yeah, okay. Well, the next day the GM called me and they said, we love your story. We think you're great. If you want to come in and talk about maybe like a possible job opportunity. So that's not an internship. Like that's a job opportunity, right?
Right. Right.
And so I go over there and we talk and I tell them a little bit about myself. I tell them my background. I tell them, you know, what my strengths are, what I'm, you know, I just pretty much laid it all on the table. I was bartending. I was spray tanning people. I was working at the station. And he goes, well, how much do you make doing all of that? You know?
Yeah.
And me and my mom went with me and my mom negotiated me a contract.
She's great. She's great. Is she available for hire? Is she available?
I always tell her anything, any Chris Kardashian like reference. I'm like, that's you.
Yep.
That's you. Like, yep. That's how you are. We negotiated. It was a 2-year deal. 2 years turned to 5 years. I was the sports anchor and reporter. I walked in, I thought they were going to give me a script and I just needed to go to hair and makeup and I was going to read it. And boy, oh boy, was I wrong. So they gave me a tripod, a camera, a mic, and we're like, peace out. Have fun. Yeah. Like, this is your beat now. And I was like, huh? Well, where do I go? Well, what's going on? Like, and it just was the most humbling, necessary, awful, but great experience of my life. I mean, I got my ass kicked every day. I got my ass kicked every day in the South Texas heat, covering baseball, football. Would love it when it was indoors, you know,
basketball, yeah.
Volleyball, air conditioned's great, but a lot of times it wasn't. It's a baseball town. So, and a lot of times there was no story. So it's like finding stories and it was just brutal, but I learned so much and I just soaked up so much. And, you know, before I know it, I'm writing packages, I'm editing, I produce my own show. No, I mean, no one helped me. And I was so angry at everyone around me, but they were forcing me to learn my craft, you know?
Yeah. Cause you're walking in, you know, not taking a job from somebody else who's gone through college specifically for that purpose or whatever, or from another market who already has that training. So yeah. It's like, hey, we see the raw potential, but we need to polish a diamond here. And to do that, we gotta rub a lot of hard surfaces, you know?
And the guy before me had been on the air for, I think, like 10 years. And it was a thing, like the ratings were tanking. I mean, this was literally their Hail Mary pass. And I remember telling my GM, I said, I'm going to make you look so good. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. But I knew that if he gave me this opportunity, I couldn't let him down. And I think that's where the people pleasing came in. It was like, I can't, you know, I felt like everyone in the newsroom for a long time really hated me. And I said, I will win them over. I will win over the people on Facebook. I will win over these people. I just need some time, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and there's not, and you know what's crazy about that, Bender, is that not a day goes by where someone from Corpus doesn't message me and say, we miss you so much here in Corpus. I hope you're doing great in Houston.
Oh,
we miss
wow.
you so much. We followed you to KFI. We followed you to LA. And now we're following you back to Houston. That have been with me since either LFL or the first radio station. And I'm like, holy, that, it blows my mind every single time. It's just incredible. So I'm so grateful for that.
What was the gap from leaving that job in Corpus to signing on at KFI?
There was actually about, so I was there for 5 years and then I got a job opportunity in San Antonio. They wanted me to go be like a lifestyle. I was almost going to be like a solely digital news anchor and the job offer was great. But I was really, really, really burnt out on a newsroom. And I didn't know, it was like this crossroads of what am I going to do? Is this what you really, do you really want to jump back into a newsroom in a bigger market where the expectation is higher?
Right.
You know, so I told them, I said, I need some time like to really like find myself, right? I said, I just need like some time. But they had a letter of intent for me and everything. And So I had that, I love that letter of intent and that promise because they were going to pay me this amount of money. And had they not given me this piece of paper, I would have never left the job and kind of given myself this freedom to explore. So I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. And I go to Mexico because, again, I'm going to brush up on my Spanish. I rent a little casita and like a little body.
I knew you were going to say casita.
It's in Playa del Carmen. So it's fine.
That's not a bad casita.
But not in the nice, like, beachy area. Like, yeah. I rented it for a month, so it was low cost. It had an AC and it had Wi-Fi. And a shower. That's
all you need.
Yeah.
You need at least two of those things. All three is luxury.
Exactly. So I went there, and on the day I got there, I got a call from San Antonio, and they said, "We're going to rescind your contract." And I said, "What do you mean?" And they said, "Well, we found these pictures of you," and I'm literally, I'm in a bikini. I'm young, and my body's banging in these pictures. I look great, but they didn't like them. And what was crazy to me, so I guess they were doing like a background check. These pictures had come up to my GM, and he said, "You know, you probably don't want to take any more pictures like that if you're going to do like the gig here." And I was like, "Oh yeah, like that was like." Like trying to be a little model when I was like 19 years old. I took those pictures with a photographer friend who I'm still friends with to this day. And my girlfriend who I'm still friends with to this day. It was like a safe space for me, but I didn't count on Celeste going mega ultra famous. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So someone had found these pictures of hers and put them all out on the internet. And they're not nudes. They're not nudes, but they are suggestive, I would say, okay, at most, but they're not like, if I had it on my phone, I would literally show it to you. Like it wasn't one, because again, the body was made, but it wasn't one of those things where I thought it was a deal breaker,
right?
A job, because my other GM had been so accepting. And what's so crazy is that the girl and the person in San Antonio was a woman. And I thought, are you going to punish me for that mistake in my past? Like, she goes, "If our competition got a hold of this, it would be over. And I'm like,
wow.
So she told me that. And I was like, she goes, "Do you have any questions for us?" And I, of course I did, but I go, no, I don't. I don't think I want to work for you guys. Like, I don't think that's my place anymore. You know?
Right,
so
right. I'm not going to try to shoehorn myself into a newsroom that clearly doesn't want me.
Right. So I went back to the drawing board. My brother works for a law firm. He would love for me to be the marketing people. The Corpus Christi newsroom would have opened their arms to me again.
Yeah.
But I said, no, I gotta do something else. So I saw the opening at KFI. I, you know, talked to Chris Little a couple of times on the phone. I did phone interviews with him. My girlfriend had an extra room in California. She goes, "Just come over here." I go, "I'm not just going to go over there." I said, "I need to do something with myself. You know, I got to do something." I said, "I have an excellent resume. I know I'm talented, and I'm not going to back down just because one bitch, says that I'm, you know, done. Like, Is my career over, you know?" And so I was in a weird spot, and I held a lot of shame for that for a long time. And then I said, no, I said, "I'm a good employee." You know, I interviewed with Chris and we got along great. And then my previous supervisor was like, "She will execute literally anything you want. She'll do it. She's a yes man." You know what I mean?
Yep. Which
she'll get it done. If she can't find a way, she'll figure it out. And that is very much the truth. You know, so Chris said it was down to me and one other person. And I said, "Well, I will make you look really good if you hire me." That's my thing. That's what I tell people. It's my promise. I promise to deliver. You know, I'm not going to slack. I'm going to do my best and then some more. I'm going to lose some sleep for you, for us.
It's for us. It's for the greater good.
Right.
It's for the greater good. Now, the opportunity then after the time at KFI, the opportunity to go back to Texas and mm-hmm. to work on the Rod Ryan Show in Houston. Mm-hmm. Did it feel like a homecoming?
Well, it was really bittersweet because I was just coming around to like everyone in the KFI newsroom. I had been there a year and I was getting along. When I met Bill Handel, he told me I was a loser. And he was like, you know, he would give me so much crap. And I had actually had this really like affinity for him. I knew he was in the Radio Hall of Fame. I had so much respect for him. He told me I was a loser. I wanted to cry, but I was like, no, I'm not, first of all. And second of all, like, I'm going to prove to you that you're wrong, you know? And I really just got, I started filling in for Jennifer Jones Lee. I was filling in for everyone. Anyone who needed a shift cover, you know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, in everyone's ear, I want your shift. I want your shift. Let me work. I want to do that. I want to do that. And had there been a small opportunity for me at KFI just to have some regular work, I would have stayed there, you know, but this thing came up. I was actually on the verge of doing a podcast with Bill Handel. We had done two pilots for it. It was ready. I mean, our news director liked it. Robin liked it. And it was like, okay, this is going to be really fun. If I'm going to stay here, I'm going to have some fun with Bill. And, you know, I know people take off a lot. This is going to be great. Well, we saw this opportunity on the job boards of the iHeart job boards. And I was like, Houston, like, that's the closest major city to my home. Yeah. Rod Ryan, like, I know that name. Like, what? It was a full freaking circle moment. It was a full circle moment. And I was like, I got at least interview for it, Robin. Like, I'm barely to the point where people can rely on me and count on me. And you know, I'm good. You know, I'm your girl, but like, please, like, let me at least interview. She goes, and Robin's so empowering and great. And she said, you deserve to be happy. You're good. You deserve, you know, whatever, if you get
those
job,
opportunities, right?
Right. Like you, if you can do it, go do it. And I just thought, I just love it. I love her. Like, she has big dick energy. We call that. And I'm forever grateful. Like I said, I wrote an email to Bill Handel today. I was like, I just want to let you know, I love you. Like, you're a big part of my, because he told me, he said, you're an idiot if you don't at least ask Robin to put your resume on their desk. And then I came home. I was like, dude, and I came home and
right.
I was like, yeah, I'm your girl. And they had interviewed a lot of people apparently. And apparently they took a lot of them to dinner. They did not take me to dinner.
They didn't take you to dinner.
No,
I think they're making up for it. I think they're making up for it.
They are. And you know what? The night before my interview, I got in a car wreck.
What?
They wanted me to be there at like, cause the show's absurdly early.
Yeah.
It's 6 to 10. So they're like, can you be here at like 5 or 6?
They want to interview before the show, or at least have you show up.
Watch the show. And they wanted me to be there to watch the show and do all that. And I was like, I can try. I go, yeah. I go, yeah. I said, of course. Well, I'm going to take my little brother and sister to dinner and someone ran a red light and T-boned us. We got in a major car accident before that night. And I messaged him. I said, hey, the car rental place doesn't open until this time. I sent them pictures of my car. I said, I'll be there as soon as possible. I said, if you don't want me to go, I understand. But like, this is, you know, what's going on. And they were like, get here as soon as you can. So I still got there super early, but I had to go to the car rental place. I had to do this. I had to do that. Yeah. Then my brother had a football game that night. I did the interview. I turned right back around and went down to Corpus to watch my brother play football. Then the next day was a conference for news media. I got two other job offers in news at that place. And I was like, when it rains, it pours. It's feast or famine. Okay. It's feast or famine. And that's the way this business is. And I said, okay, I want, and they had asked me, and I told them I was going to that conference. They go, well, would you still want to be in TV? They said, a lot of radio people want to be in TV. I said, I started in radio. I said, I just feel like I can be more myself here with this show. Yeah. And it's kind of a bro show and it's really fun. And we play games and we dare people. And we eat things and we do all those things. That's more conducive to my personality. So I felt like I was literally a rat in a cage ready to go.
Did you feel like you needed some transition time? I know you had the radio experience in Corpus with the bench warmers, mm-hmm. but this is major market morning show. You know,
yeah.
Was there a transition time, or do you feel like you hit the ground running?
Thanks to you and all the one you majorly at KFI majorly were so helpful to me. of course, sitting back and listening to Bill, John, Ken, Shannon, and Gary, you know, all of them, of course, you're absorbing, but you were so helpful and so hands-on with me. And you really, not every newsroom is welcoming. You welcome me. And honestly, I felt like what we did in that booth at KFI, Octopus Arms, doing this trending, I could take a nap and do what I'm doing now.
No, it's amazing.
And don't tell them that, because they're going to give me more work. But
it's amazing, though, what you do wearing a bunch of different hats in a place that requires you to wear a bunch of different hats. And then you go to a place where everybody's got maybe one or two hats. And you're like, you're almost bored a little bit.
I don't have a board. I have an on and off mic.
Yeah.
Two buttons.
And a cough button.
And a cough. Right. Three. Yeah. Which I just turned off. but it's, you're right. And they're like, well, can you do this? Can you get here at this time? I'm like, they're like, you have two news that you give. You know, you have your skinny A, your skinny B. It's five news stories. I'm like, and the first two are the same.
That's nothing. Nothing.
Thank you. Nothing. And that's what Rod, he's always very, I tell him, I go, okay, so for the fluff story, I go, there's a girl here, she did this, there's a guy here who did this, there's a guy who's there. Which one do you like? Which one is better? Tell me. And he's like, well, which one have you written? I said, all of them.
They're so used to somebody like, oh, well, I haven't written them yet. You got to tell me which one. You're like, no.
Yeah. I'm like, you pick, like, dealer, like, you are the dealer. You pick, and would you like, and here. And he's like, you have this. I'm like, yeah, that's a headline. You want this or this? I think these are both equally, you know, I'm coming from a news world. So he's probably like, you geek, I don't care. Like,
yeah, that's great. That's great. Just nerd out over there and be like, oh, yeah, now, something interesting that you've been posting on social media, test talks.
Yeah.
I love those. Love those. How did that come about? I mean, I'm a big play on words guy. I'm a big pun guy. So if you want to do test talks, I'm here for it. But how did that come about?
I would love to take credit for it, but it was actually our digital guy over there. And I would always tell him, you know, this concludes my TED talk, because I'm so chatty and wordy. And I would always say that. He's like, well, why don't you just call it like test talks?
That's,
you know,
great.
And I'm,
that's
like,
great.
I'm like, sold, boom. And they've created the logos and everything, yep, over there. There's a team. That's another thing. They really welcome me before I even got there. I think I had a decent IG following, you know, I had like 7,000 when I got there. And before I even tapped a mic in Houston, Rod had them go follow her. You're going to love her. I think you're really going to like this girl. And for the most part, the city has welcomed me with open arms there. As you go with any market, there's going to be people who like the old, don't like change, don't want a new, but just like with anything, I say, I just need some time. I just need some time. I will eventually win you over. I don't know how, but
that's great. That's great. Yeah. My second Houston guest so far on the podcast. My first was one of my former students, Star Harvey. She does weather in the mornings on CW 39.
Okay. Okay. Star Harvey. I have a meteorologist currently that I am obsessed with, but I'll have to give Star a chance.
Yes, please do.
I will. I'll follow her on Twitter too.
Also,
yeah,
another pun I'm thinking of just now. You've got to do something with "it's so necessary."
I love that.
Or something like that.
Okay, see, those are good. And like what our digital guy created. The one I created that I'm still trying to make cash, like, oh, you're a Tesla fan? Oh, well, you're just a testicle.
Oh, my God.
They're like, please leave. Ma'am. Ma'am.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Walking away.
Good interview.
Oh, God. All right. Now, let's just do a funny face so I could do a still shot.
Okay.
And then that's what I'll use to promote the podcast.
There's
more of this. Please do. Please do. Are we ready?
My family does a contest with this. Yes.
No, they don't.
Yeah, we send ugly face pictures to each other all the time.
That's great.
Often my favorite one.
Okay, that's great. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Ready?
Yep.
Now. Okay, I got it. I can still shot that. It's no problem. Tessa, it was great to catch up with you. I love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Love you, Bender. Thank you for everything.
Bye.
Keep killing it. Bye.
You can watch this episode on YouTube and DBNA TV. Follow the Aaron Bender podcast on your favorite platforms and link to it at aaronbender.com. That's also where you can find all my social media. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.